we used to say, is this client buying a process or are they buying a deliverable? And if a client's buying a deliverable, they might be a little bit less hands-on. They might just want to get to the solution. You do the research, you tell us what you hear. In other cases, you might hear blind spots from a client that they might not realize that they have.
Hey guys, you're listening to More Right Than Wrong. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Angie. So each week, we discuss the tensions we face every day as women in the modern workplace. And the topic today is one that is probably familiar to many of you who work in creative fields. In a world where there is no hard and firm rights and wrongs, how does one balance your subject matter expertise and your clients' preferences?
Today, we're chatting with Mimi Chun, who's an artist and designer based in New York, but more importantly, a really close friend of Angie's who I've heard about for so long. So super stoked to talk to her. Angie, tell us a little bit about how you know her.
I've known Mimi for years. We met through kind of the IDEO network, and then I had the honor of working with her at General Assembly. And Mimi came to mind specifically on this topic because it is a tough one to kind of thread for most creative folks. Her perspective is unique because she spent many years as a brand consultant and designer, working with not just teams, but really opinionated founders, right? And so really thinking about how does one design and build brands, but also navigate the process when you're working with really tough clients.
So excited to chat with her. So welcome, Mimi, and let's get started.
So Mimi, you and I have known each other forever, but let's just start at the very beginning. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and of what your background is and kind of how this shaped you today.
Sure. So I grew up outside of Philadelphia. My mother is a artist. My father is a computer scientist. They both immigrated from Korea, I think during the 60s. And so my sister and I were born in the States. My background is in design and art.
How did you end up in design and art? And, you know, what influenced that?
Sure. I mean, I think art always had a very strong presence within my life because my mother is a fine artist. And it was always like the sort of default go-to activity in our home. When I was in high school applying to undergrad, I kind of took two paths. One was to apply for a science track and the other was to apply for a fine art track. You know, so I applied for design, not necessarily really knowing what design was. I always think about how it's interesting that kids today obviously know what design is. But, you know, when I was growing up, it was kind of like design slash commercial art. It was just a way to sort of monetize your art, or at least that's, I went into it fairly naive and with a fairly, I would say, unformed understanding of what design was and could be. So I applied to College of Fine Arts, College of Science, got accepted to both, figured, okay, I'll go there. I'll start off in design because I'll know faster whether or not I like it than like choosing a science route. And within like, you know, the first month, I was like, I love it. I understand it. This is my thing, and stuck with it ever since. What I was interested in terms of science was actually in a neuropsychology route. And so some of my interest in social sciences certainly came back into design sort of later on.
Yeah. Yeah. Understanding people. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, so on that note, can you talk more about the arc of your career? There's a design part of your career and then a fine art part of your career. Super interested in hearing how that wove together.
Yeah. So I would say that on the design side of things, it's run the gamut in terms of my actual professional experience. I've worked at small design studios. I've worked at large innovation consultancies. I've worked in-house at tech companies. I've founded companies, and now I'm back to freelance consulting. And so the way I think about it is that there's the design side, then there's the fine art practice. The design side, about half my career has been in brand, and the other half of my career has been in product service innovation, and then the fine art side has been in many ways a reaction to and in response to some of my experiences working in design.
Mm. I remember in graduate school in design, there was like a communications design class that we took as sort of like COMD 101, where we were branding something end to end. And I asked the professor, what is the difference between art and design? She said, artists solve their own problems, design solve other people's. Like, designers always have clients. And so with that said, curious to hear, what has been your experience? How do you even define a client? To you, what is a client?
Sure. I think the client really, it's interesting because when I think about my design practice, and, you know, this is probably like props to working at IDEO, your client was always your end user when you're developing a product or a service. I think brand is a slightly different animal. I think that certainly in my experience, it's been, you know, when I work with founders, I do a lot of freelance consulting with startups. When you're working with founders, there are some founders who are like, would you just apply the same human-centered process to developing a brand? And I'm of the perspective that you can't use user testing to develop a brand. A lot of it is about, you know, what are the fundamental values or the principles of the organization? Oftentimes, the founder is like the embodiment of what those values are. So you're working with the founder, you're working with what is the intention of this company, but also a lot of the design principles or a lot of like the expression or the how of it comes from conversations that you might have with the founders themselves or the founding team themselves. So brand, I think, is slightly different. Product services are always end users. And every artist has a different, I would say, a different client. Some artists might take a very material-based approach to work. Some artists might take, you know, a conceptual approach. Some might be formalists and like create sort of abstract expressions. For me, the work that I'm interested in making is very much rooted in wanting to have a dialogue with the public. So I see my work as needing to communicate fairly clearly. I mean, obviously, you know, it needs to have presence, it needs to be well executed, and it needs to have, like, the craft needs to be well done. But that's almost in service of, is it clear, you know, when the viewer approaches my work, am I inspiring them to think about certain things? So for me, like, you know, I think certainly my design training, perhaps like an overly expository sort of approach to design has in some ways taken form in my sculptures. I'm not interested in work that is biographical. Like my fine artwork comments on social, contemporary, critical, cultural issues happening today.
It sounds like you want to start a dialogue. Like it's a conversation. And it sounds like audience is a really big part of the definition of a client.
Yes.
For you.
Yes.
Can I go back to a comment you made about the client side work? Because I think what I hear then is there are designers who see themselves as facilitators, right? That are helping to guide a solution that meets constraints versus those who see themselves as more active interpreters, perhaps, of a creative brief with a stronger point of view. And in that, implicit in that is the prioritization of needs and desires and opinions, right? So is the client's opinion more important, or is it about truth in the craft or the expertise that you bring as a SME, as a subject matter expert in this space? So I often think about this, particularly having navigated both a startup environment where the dynamic is quite different than if you go into a corporate environment. So in a corporate environment, sure, I can say, yep, I appreciate that you don't like the color green, but that's
relevant.
That's a personal opinion. Versus I think the founder dynamic is a little bit different because they are the ones that are building the essence. So can you talk a little bit about how you approach it, perhaps by audience, perhaps by context, in terms of understanding if you are more of a facilitator or if you're more of an active kind of shaper?
I think it depends. I think you get a sense of these things sort of early on, even when you're crafting the brief. And certainly during early on, you know, as is typical, I'm sure, for many designers, like the beginning phases of project is working with the client to craft the brief, but also once you're past that phase, having conversations, doing some knowledge sharing with the client. And a lot of things can kind of emerge from those conversations. You can get a real sense of like their perspectives on things. You can get a sense of what it is that they're looking for. Like at IDEO, we used to say, is this client buying a process or are they buying a deliverable? And if a client's buying a deliverable, they might be a little bit less hands-on. They might just want to get to the solution. You do the research. You tell us what you hear. In other cases, you might hear blind spots from a client that they might not realize that they have. I had an experience where I was working with a client and she was the head of innovation at a large organization, but she had come from an operational background. Mm. And so she was always zooming ahead. Like, how do we get there? How do we implement this? How do we scale this?
Exactly. The practical side.
Yeah. Exactly. So the process of working with her was coaching her through, let's not take this off the table because you're seeing roadblocks to its implementation. Let's explore this. Let's see where this can go. And if this is a new line of business for you that you're interested in exploring, we can find ways to create small pilots that we can operationalize. We can think through those steps of how to sort of run it and see it, get some user feedback, but don't shut it down because you're thinking about how your organization works today and you're thinking about your OKRs for the quarter and how this doesn't fit in with it.
Well, that anecdote's so interesting too, because there are some designers who would take that and say, okay, a constraint is that it needs to be scalable and operational. Right. So the fact that you were like, okay, here's a coachable moment. This is actually a blind spot, points to the fact that you have a point of view as to how this process should be approached. So to that end, for you specifically, how does that then factor into the types of clients you're willing to work with?
There's a part of me that looks at the ethics of the company. There's a part of me that looks at what is the brief. There's a part of me that looks at, am I the right fit for what this client needs? And then obviously there's all the pragmatic, like, you know, timing, deliverables, all of that stuff. But I would say the largest filter for me is actually more ethical these days. And I recognize that I'm in a very like privileged position to be able to pick and choose on that basis.
Tell us more about, it sounds like it ends up being such a person, client, project specific thing so often. You're speaking about that particular example, and it has to do with that role and the background of that person, the perspective they're bringing. It was interesting, even the way you talked about it, it sounded like you took a gentle approach, like, hey, let's take some baby steps here, like sort of unpacking it. It didn't sound really pushy to me, at least in the way that you relayed the story. But would love to hear you talk more about that. Like, what factors into your intuition about how much do you encourage them to think differently? Because it does so often, in my experience, come down to the personality of that person and feeling out how open to this are they. And even talking about the end user audience versus the client, at the end of the day, whatever we define them as, there is somebody who's signing the paycheck. And so there's that factor too. And just curious to hear, do you have a range or is it like, no, I always have something in mind. I really want to push them to the edge. Like, what's your style? What's your general approach to this?
I would say that it varies. I think there's a lot of intuition and reading the room that happens in the moment. And then I think it's like also a little bit about understanding what the anxiety is. In this particular case, the client was new in the position. So you're thinking about, okay, probably a little bit on the hook to have some results, show some progress in certain things. And so a lot of it is actually helping to support the client share back with their teams internally. So whether that means attending those meetings or whether that means helping create communications or documents that might help them socialize some of the work that's happening. And then it's also, I mean, in this particular case, the final deliverable included a range of ideas, some that were more incremental and some that were a little bit further out there, you know, bigger lines of business, bigger opportunities. So I think in having the range, you're able to kind of cover the gamut, make sure that they feel okay about this stuff that I can do right, you know, today or tomorrow. And then there's stuff that we can start to think about and noodle on for the future.
And that was like predefined as part of the brief. So you knew that your task was to push the edge, or how did that come about?
I think it came like through the research and then, you know, identifying what the opportunities were and then working with the client to say, okay, these are three or four that we're going to flesh out and start to visualize or start to get a little bit more concrete on. I had this executive coach who was always like, just name it, like name your problems. Like naming it will oftentimes like do half the work. So if you're like, oh, let's make sure that we have something that we can share back to the team tomorrow that we can see progress on in, you know, within the next quarter. And then let's make sure we have something big so the organization is inspired by the work that we're doing. So I think it's just like being able to articulate some of those things and being a little bit more explicit around them. There's no hidden agendas. It's all very clear and laid out and explicit.
It feels to me, though, it's so much guided by whether or not a client is asking you to help solve a problem they believe exists or a problem that needs to be solved for others to approve. In other words, like, is the evaluation by extrinsic individuals more important than whether or not the quality of the work satisfies intrinsic beliefs, right? So if someone is saying, I want this to be good because I want others around me to perceive myself as being capable, is different from saying, hey, I want you to rethink the brand, convince me that I believe this is the right solution.
I think there's definitely a level of that. But I also think there's just part of it is like, you know, I think of that 2x2 where it's like, you know, implementation, like easy to difficult on one side. And then like on the other axis, it's how much does this move the needle for the customer experience, let's say, for instance. And I think there's always low hanging fruit that you can solve really easily. Like, I'm sure that there are organizations that hear a lot of complaints about things that can be easily addressed. It's just a matter of like, is that something that we should just do because we can do that really quickly? And then we can also work on, do we want a range of things in this that are difficult to solve, move the needle, or do we just want to focus on sort of low hanging fruit that's easy to implement? Or do we want a range of those things?
Right. It's like, what are your priorities? What's your business priority at this point?
Right.
Well, and also, to be honest, like whether or not the priorities exist because of the end customer or because there's an OKR to be met.
Right.
Right. So the process of the internal approvals, the process of like internal satisfaction, right? So I need to deliver this new framework by the end of this quarter because that's what I agreed to internally.
Yep.
Is very removed from the actual end user, but is a real requirement or driver for a lot of clients.
I mean, I think every client is human. They're in positions where they're trying to establish trust, particularly if they're new in a position that will ideally get them to the point where they maybe can work on some of the bigger ideas once having demonstrated that they can, you know, that they can get stuff done.
I think it's really interesting that so much of the discussion is about the relationships and the people and not actually about the problem or the craft,
totally.
Right?
So,
it's just like managing the emotions around you.
Right. You could even translate it to just any relational conversation in terms of how open are you to my ideas versus how closely are you held to yours?
I mean, I've definitely had clients. I had a recent brand project where the client was pushing for things that I wouldn't have necessarily intuitively have recommended, but was in the end very grateful that she pushed for them because they got us to a different place.
Very cool.
Yeah. I'm not the authority in any scenario or in every scenario. It's more just, it's nice when it's collaborative. It's nice when you can have that push and pull. It's nice where you can have these sort of honest conversations. It's so unique to each problem. It's so unique to each client. It's so unique to the brief.
If I can just jump in for 1 second.
Sure.
Mimi and I have worked together. And my observation and what makes Mimi such a fantastic collaborator is that she is equally open to new ideas and willing to listen, but also has a strong point of view. You have the confidence to kind of say, this is what I believe. And I think it's really hard to be both a good listener and to be open and to have people feel heard, but then also feel confident in your own expression and your ideas. And the only times I've ever seen you get flustered is if the other person on the other side feels closed, as in they're not listening. And so you're putting something out saying, I'm giving you this. Could you build on this? And they're saying, no, you're wrong. I'm right. That's it. And that's when I've seen you get frustrated. So I feel like it's not even about the content, but it's about how the interactions happen.
I think that's fair. I mean, I feel like I'm, you know, I've been doing design for so long that it's not a remotely egoic act for me at this point. Like, I don't take things personally. Like, I enjoy being pushed to do things sort of out of the realm. Yeah, I think that's probably fair.
I loved hearing the way Angie described your work style in being decisive. How much is selling or the art of persuasion in the way that you deliver? How does that factor in to the openness and the receptivity of a client hearing something that might be a little bit different or more challenging for them to accept?
So I think I have a couple reactions to that. I think typically I'm fortunate in that I'm hired because most of the clients believe in a human-centered approach and that the customer or the customer need, even if it's latent and undiagnosed, is should be the loudest voice in the room. And so anything that you present, if it's supported by data and you can pull quotes or you can pull research that goes to support why you made the decision to design it this way, then it's a, you know, it's an easy sell. And that's probably more on the product side, I would say. On the brand side, I think choice is a huge, huge factor. If you give, you know, enough options, people will be receptive to figuring out, you know, I think for a lot of clients, like, especially for new founders, maybe who are embarking on a brand process for the first time, they don't necessarily know what they like yet, or they don't necessarily know.
Yeah.
A lot of it is about giving them options, seeing what they respond to, talking through why they respond to certain things. And that's a huge thing about sort of how to get alignment on those projects.
It's helping them discover their own preferences and yeah. giving them language to talk about it.
Exactly.
That's really cool. So that's an intuitive part of your process. It's like equipping clients to, like, you're helping them discover and articulate their own design preferences or creative. And then as you do that, how much are you influencing that? What they like and what they don't like.
I mean, I always think it's interesting when you work with founders who maybe have strong opinions about why they like blue or why they don't like blue, and you really get them to articulate what it is that is driving that. And that's more valuable than whether or not they like blue or not. I mean, it's like, you know, any great creative brief is not prescriptive, but it might give you enough structure or enough scaffolding for you to figure out what's the best expression for it, but it's not necessarily prescriptive. And I think similarly, when you're working with clients, helping them figure out why something resonates or why something doesn't is valuable to both of you, both your process, the project, and the client themselves.
Yeah. And I think what's really impressive in watching you work is your ability to look past what is said to understand what is meant and what is driving that decision-making. And I think that has always been, again, it goes back to the idea that, like, you're an incredible listener and observer, but also incredibly confident when it comes to the execution and of things. So I do think that that is an art that is just kind of under-celebrated because it's such a native thing to you. Like, you hear what they're saying, but you can be like, actually, what they're responding to is X, Y, and Z. And I've always been like, oh my God, Mimi's the best collaborator for that reason. Whereas, like, I'll get frustrated and be like, okay, just because you don't like blue. And you're like, actually, here's what's actually happening there. And I'm like, oh, okay.
I think so much of it is helping people develop the language. I think about this all the time. My partner is in sound design for brands, like audio logos and things like that. And I just imagine being on the client side of things and trying to articulate. I mean, I studied music, but, you know, I have no vocabulary to be able to talk about, like, tone or pitch or whatever. Like, I would just be completely out of my depths. And so,
right, it would be like, it sounds good, right? Why don't you like
or
it?
Or could you make it a little more ding ding?
Yeah, like, totally. You know. You totally end up singing. You're like, you know, that's not da, da, da.
Totally.
But that's a great point. That's a great analogy to say, like, the vocabulary in terms of understanding and being able to express something richer than just, can you make it happier?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I love that.
When you look back at your career, what do you think that you got more right than wrong?
I think I chose the right career. I think I'm very happy that I have this sort of, I've managed to get to a place where I have a sort of bifurcated design practice and fine art practice. The two are in tension with one another, but they have a very healthy tension with one another. You know, my fine art side allows me to be critical of some of the things that I feel complicit in with my design work. And the design work, it's like I have a professional excuse to stay on top of everything, stay on top of, you know, pop culture, stay on top of media, understand how the business landscape is shifting, all of these things. And so the two have a very sort of synergistic relationship with one another, although they're oppositional. And so I appreciate that. So I think that's something that I'm grateful for, even though they might conflict sometimes.
I think what's really important for us in these discussions is to kind of get as concrete as one can get in such a fluid discussion. And so much of what we heard today is just about how it is about gut, about instinct, about how you kind of find that balance over time. If you were to give anyone advice on how to kind of approach the balance, like what is the way best way of balancing your gut, your instinct with what a client is looking for? Do you have any kind of framework or advice on how you articulate that?
And on one extreme end of it, Mimi, you know, the advertising world is like the Don Draper, Mad Men style, come in and wow you, I know it's right. It's not a dialogue. It's like, my job is to like almost entertain and sweep you off your feet. That's one end of it, which feels pretty legacy, pretty old school. And then on the other extreme, it was like transactional almost, where the client is like, this is what I want.
The client's always right.
Right.
Yeah.
And you're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And you just like you never push back, or it's not even a pushback. You don't even have like thoughts about it. You just do it. So I think it's like, keep that in mind. And then what would be your advice of like where to land and how to land in that spectrum?
I don't think that either end is particularly, they're both lonely places to be, I would say. If you truly believe that the best work comes out of collaborative efforts, where you are mindful of everything from client to context to users, you have to opt for a third option. And it's harder. It's harder to get there. There can be push or pull, but it's definitely worth it. And I think it can happen if you, again, like apply things like choice, apply things like really honing in on what the, you know, what the end goal looks like, where we want to be in terms of where do we want to be at the end of this, having a sort of agreed upon destination. I think you can get there. It's going to take some work, and you know, there might be some internal ups and downs, but you can get there. So I don't know if that answers your question around advice. But yeah, I guess like trust your gut, not your head, not your heart. Your gut will kind of help you get there.
Actually, that was beautifully answered. Just the whole notion of it being that either extreme is a lonely place to be is like, God, you're so right.
Yeah.
Like you can't always just be right. And the idea of collaboration and human relationships being the key to the best outcome is actually really true. Well, Mimi, thank you so much for joining us. This was so great. It's always wonderful chatting with you.
It was so great. It was great to finally meet Mimi. I've heard so much about her, and she just seems like such a grounded person.
She really is.
And so thoughtful in her approach to how she relates to clients and builds relationships. Super insightful to me. Just prioritizing the relationship and really almost the psychology behind what's the fear, what's holding them back, and maybe that's where you can meet them. That was so cool.
Yeah. One thing that I've always really, really appreciated about Mimi is how egoless she is when she is listening. And I think that that really came through in the way that she serves clients, in the sense that, you know, we talk a lot about the notion of there's a duality and there's like an empirical value if something is being right or something is being wrong. But when Mimi is doing her research and she's listening, she's not thinking about what's right or wrong. She's just saying, let me take in what you're saying to me and understand what you're saying. And I really appreciate that about her, because she always reminds me to aim to do the same. When someone is opinionated as I am, you know, who has lots of ideas, it is sometimes hard to be like, okay, wait, hold on. It's not about reinforcing what I know to be true, but rather hearing another person's truth and being present enough to process it. And I think that really came through in what Mimi was talking about today.
Yeah. And I think what's counterintuitive is what happens when you just really give that person the floor and listen to them. You're much more inclined to come to a place of whether it's compromise or collective opinion. I just think that it's much more likely to come to a positive outcome together, because that person feels heard and you're actually able to incorporate. If you're really listening, you're listening to things that are not spoken. There's this thing called generative listening. There are these, I just recently learned about this, like four different forms of listening. I think I have it right here, actually. And the levels of listening. Here you go. The listeners can't see this, but this is actually comes from MIT Presencing Institute. The first one is just like download, listening from habit, you're being polite. The second is factual. You're listening from the outside. It's sort of like you're ready for debate. Third is empathetic, listening from within. So there's more dialogue. I think a lot of friends probably do this, you know. But then this fourth one is generative, like listening from what they call the field, collective creativity. Generative listening really takes that hyper-present approach that Mimi does.
Yeah. What did you, in terms of your own personal practice, take away from Mimi's conversation? In other words, like, what would you incorporate moving forward, or how might you engage differently in your own client work?
That's a great question. Very early in my career, I had a mentor that told me that all business is the business of people. Mm-hmm. And it kind of this whole thing of like, I think I was, you know, very young, right out of school. And I was just sort of complaining about like that,
I never do that.
I was just like ragging on probably clients' difficulties. It was just like all the people dynamics. And he just said, look, all business is the business of people. And you're never going to get away from it. Like, whatever you do. I mean, there are certain jobs where you could try to get as far away from that as possible. I'm not wired that way anyway. So for one, it really validated that of like, oh yeah, like at the core of this, it's not about the creative idea. It's actually about the people.
Yeah.
Because that's really what it comes down to. And then just that reminder of like, collaboration's more fun. It almost made it seem like in a lot of ways, that's the part that really does motivate me every day. Like this relationship through line kept coming up in the way that I understood what she was conveying. And one of the things that she said was when I asked about those two ends of the spectrum, pushing your own idea or just being like, yeah, we just have to do what we're told. How she said that both ends are lonely places to be. That was really beautiful. Mm-hmm. It's like, we don't want to be in that lonely space. Like the whole point of this is that the collaboration is in the middle. And more importantly, way more rewarding, both from a relationship standpoint, but I bet just also from the creative output.
I agree. It also reminded me of, and again, I think a lot of these conversations are more things that we sometimes know to be true, but sometimes deprioritize over time, which is just the idea that when you go into any kind of situation where you're trying to resolve two different viewpoints. So in this situation, if you have a point of view about what is the best creative solution, and then you have your client inputs, going in and asking yourself, are you going to this conversation because you want to be right or because you want to prioritize the relationship?
Right.
And I think too often people are like, I want to win. Maybe this is just very revealing about my mindset. I'm a very competitive person. No, but I mean, I often think about the fact that it's not about being right, because there is no empirically like fun. This is not a math problem, right? In a math problem, there is a right answer often, but it's more about making the collaboration, the relationship stronger and making sure that everyone comes out of it in a comfortable place with the outcome. And that's something that sometimes easy to forget, especially when you're maybe working with a collaborator who isn't the most conversant when it comes to kind of creative feedback. So, you know, I can always feel my annoyance going up when it's like, well, I don't like green.
Well, and it feels like a lot of times in my job, I feel like I'm more of a facilitator than anything else.
Yes.
And my job is totally really, like, it's like that and very much a brand design therapist, where it's like, mm-hmm. like, tell me more about that. Like, that's an interesting statement about green. Like, let's unpack that, you know, and in a way that, like you said, I have no vested interest, like real genuine curiosity. So there's space for that discussion level of understanding. When you do that, like it greases the wheels, the conversation flows. It's much easier for everybody to feel good. And it's like that detached style of sort of like, I have no ego in this. I'm not invested in a particular outcome. It is funny though, like the simplification of, are you trying to win or are you more interested in the relationship? I actually think there's a third competing interest that I'm guilty of, which is like, do I just want a decision made and I don't care because we need to do this within a certain time? Sometimes it gets so subjective where it's just like, we just need to arrive at a decision.
It's not just about moving pixels, but rather it's moving people and corralling people.
Right. Which is like
the art of bringing people together, arriving at a decision, totally. If there were one more thing that I could add, I felt a groundedness in Mimi's presence. And I do think that there's something to be said for entering into conversations with a spirit of trust. And we all want the same thing. We're all kind of moving toward the same goals here and not losing sight of that and giving people the benefit of the doubt. I think when you do that in general, whether it's in the workplace or even in personal life, it's much easier to keep an open dialogue about differences and creative opinions and trying to arrive at something. It definitely requires a lot of patience.
It was so great having Mimi here. It's just so nice to have these kind of deep conversations with people that you care about and learn something new every time.
Yeah, and who are like incredible at what they do. So I mean, thank you so much, Mimi, for investing that time with us. It was such a great, insightful conversation. And I feel similarly, always humbled and constantly learning by these conversations that we're having.
Thanks for listening. You can hit us up on social if you have any questions, feedback, or just want to chat about the episode. And please follow and subscribe to More Right Than Wrong. And we'd love it if you'd leave a positive review. Thanks so much.